Welcome to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. I'm currently doing this introduction, right on the edge of the Adriatic coast. I'm currently in Montenegro. I'm working here at a poker tournament for 14 days, but I couldn't find anywhere quiet to do this. It's such a busy place here, so I've just come out by the beach. So there's a bit of background noise here, but I'm sure it won't detract from what I'm about to say. Just want to say well done to our beloved Phil, who has recently celebrated 6 months as a Striver, during which time he has been someone who doesn't drink alcohol. That is who he is today, that's how he defines himself. Phil's story is actually a really beautiful one, actually. He came to Strive, like most people do, unsure about how alcohol fitted into his life. He knew he had a problem with it, but he wasn't really thinking about removing it from his life permanently. I convinced him to take the December taster, one of the most challenging times of the year to take the taster, if you can think about it, because you're taking a vow to not drink alcohol for 27 days at Christmas, which is the time when we drink the most. And I remember the turmoil that Phil went through, particularly around his business Christmas parties. But he managed to get through the month without drinking, and he hasn't looked back. He's one of our most beloved members on Strive and always pipes up and gives some absolutely wonderful advice. So, Phil, well done on 6 months, and let's be celebrating that when it's 6 years and 60 years, mate. You're doing really, really well. I wanted to say a big welcome to Michelle, who joined Strive this week. Michelle's dived straight in there and he's doing the work, so well done, Michelle. And also welcome back to Sarah and the two Jens. Yes, welcome back. It's not easy to stay on Strive, all right? It's not, for many, many different reasons. One of them is that you think along the way that you've cracked it. You think that you've cracked it and you no longer need the support of Strive. So you leave, and then once you struggle, you find it difficult to come back. And the other reason is you leave because you don't think it's working for you. And on both counts, I would say this, give it time, okay? We are fighting one of the most powerful addictions in the world. Alcoholism, as an invisible, violent, and dominant belief system, is very, very powerful, okay? And in order for us to beat it and be someone who doesn't drink alcohol without craving, then we need to rewire the way that we think about alcohol and create new belief systems and effectively create a new personality. That is going to take time. That's going to take many years. So what most people do on Strive to make this work, they don't look at this work as a ball ache. They don't look at it as something that is, that they have to do that they don't want to do. They look at it completely differently. They think to themselves, wow, this is really wonderful work that I enjoy doing. These are wonderful people who I'm in love with. These are great connections that I'm making. And all of a sudden, it doesn't become a chore to come on Strive and to do the work. It becomes something that you're really excited to do, okay? It's just the way that we think about these things and look at these things. And lastly, I'll say this before I leave you in the capable hands of our guest this week, is, and it's very apt that we have this guest, is take your time with it. You know, when Phil first came to Strive, he didn't know whether he was going to be someone who wasn't going to drink alcohol forever. I know that Kim at the moment, who's doing the intensive, is struggling with that same thought. Oh, what's it going to be like if I'm someone who doesn't drink alcohol forever? Am I going to be like this really boring librarian? Don't worry about it. Like, just think about today. I'm going to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol today. Just take it one day at a time. The old maxim, it is a cliche, but it works, folks. Let's break this down into tiny chunks. Anyway, on to our guest today, BJ Fogg. BJ Fogg is a behavioral scientist that has personally coached over 40,000 people in forming new habits using his breakthrough method called Tiny Habits. His forthcoming book, Tiny Habits, The Small Changes That Change Everything, is scheduled for publication early 2020 and is contracted to be published in over 12 languages. Fortune magazine named BJ a new guru you should know for his insights about mobile and social networks, and his TEDx talk, Forget Big Change and Start With Tiny Habits, has over 1 million views. I will leave links to his website. I really strongly suggest you get over there. You can take his Tiny Habits program. I think there's a free version over there to help you get into it. Super, super powerful stuff, but really simplified and easy for you to chow down on. I really, really love talking to BJ. There's no video version of this, so there won't be anything over in YouTube. It's just audio. But I loved him. What a wonderful, wonderful human being. If you ever get the chance to talk to this guy or reach out to him or have a cup of tea with him, do that. And it was just an absolute wonderful plus that when I started to talk to him, I realized that he was someone who doesn't drink alcohol. So well done, BJ, for joining the gang and being someone who doesn't drink alcohol. So I'm going to shut the hell up and leave you in the capable hands of BJ Fogg. As ever, if you would like to get involved with Strive or join the Taste or all the intensive experiences and become someone who doesn't drink alcohol, and send me an email at Lee at thetruthaboutalcohol@gmail.com. Take care of yourself.
Okay, BJ Fogg, welcome to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. I was just saying that I've just flown back from California, so I'm a little bit jet lagged. I got a little bit of man flu as well, and I was just looking at the preferences on Zoom, and it said something like touch up your video or something. I'm like, I need that today. I need Zoom to
Gosh.
But we're not gonna
have not found that feature yet. I need that all the time. I haven't found it yet. You'll have to send me a tip.
Well, we're not gonna be using a video, so that actually makes me feel better. First of all, just a brief synopsis for people who don't know. Could you break down the BMAP behavioral change model for the audience a little bit? And then as we will stem away from that and try to see how we can incorporate this into stopping drinking alcohol.
Yeah. After doing about 15 years of research on behavior and persuasion and so on, I stumbled across a new model. I uncovered a model that I now call the Fogg Behavior Model. And it goes like this. Behavior happens when three things come together at the same moment. When there's motivation to do the behavior, that's number one is motivation. Number two, there's ability to do the behavior. And three is there's a prompt. There's something that says do this behavior now. And it turns out that that model describes all types of behaviors. It's a universal model. And so since then, I've been applying it in many ways, and so have other people. And that all behavior comes back to those three things: motivation, ability, and prompt.
Okay, super cool. So let's break that down a little bit then. So we'll start with motivation. So most people who come to Truth About Alcohol, initially they want to stop drinking alcohol. So how does someone discover what their core motivators are, and why are they so important?
Yeah, I'm not the world's expert in understanding your core motivators or what's driving it and so on. But one way to look at drinking, I guess there's two sides of the coin. You could either, one behavior is to stop. That's a behavior type. Another behavior is to start. So you might do something instead. So there's a replacement. And even though I'm an expert on behavior change, I'm not an expert on, you know, issues around alcohol. That's a very specific thing, as are 100 other types of behavior changes. So you could look at it as I want to stop the behavior and here's why, or I want to start doing something else like drinking a lot more water or drinking something else instead of alcohol and here's why. And I don't have a special method for like looking deep inside and understanding, you know, what's your driver for drinking. I'm sure there's some social reasons. Mm-hmm. You show up at parties, you don't want to, you know, be the one that looks like you're not having fun. Certainly there's reasons about, wow, I've had a tough day, I need to relax. And certainly there's biological things that figure in. But I'm not gonna be able to give like a great tidy method for really uncovering the motivation, but let's understand that it does exist, but you can change your behavior without really understanding the motivation piece. There's three elements to behavior. And if you can change any one of them significantly, you can stop the behavior.
Oh, okay. So it's not like a triumvirate of motivation, ability, and prompts that if not put in place, this wasn't going to work. You could just work on one area. So. What come to mind there for me, BJ, was if we're going to stop, i.e. we're going to stop drinking, or we're going to start, i.e. we're going to start a new habit, then what we get into then is the nuts and bolts of where we're drinking alcohol and why we're drinking alcohol. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's where your tiny little habits can come in then, can't it? Because if you're drinking at home because you're bored, for example, now we can look at starting something that cures your boredom rather than drinking alcohol, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So there's a few ways. Wow, we we can go with tiny habits for a while. We can come back to the behavior model, and they're related. But let me give some specific. So in the tiny habits method, what you do is you set up what we call a recipe, and it goes like this. After I, and then there's some existing behavior, and I'll pick oral hygiene for the example. After I brush, I will, and then you add the new habit you want. I will floss one tooth. So you already brush, and you make that a reminder or the prompt in my model for doing the new habit, which would be flossing one tooth. And in the case of you're getting home from work and you're sitting down to watch the TV, and that's usually when you, you know, pull out a beer or open a bottle of wine, you could then create a tiny habit recipe that, like, after I turn on the TV, I will get out some sparkling water with a lemon in it, right? So a competing behavior, and just see if that recipe fits well into your life.
I love the term competing behavior there. So I can imagine someone's coming home from work, it's 6 o'clock, and normally what they do, they get in the house, they've had a hard day at work, and the first thing they're going to do is going to open that bottle of wine and drink wine. What you're saying is you can use the anchor. I mean, I use the word anchor there because I like the term anchor. The anchor of getting in the house and putting your keys down, if you like, and walking to the kitchen. Because that is a behavior you're doing every single day, say Monday to Friday, for anyone who's working in a cubicle, which will be a lot of people. And then you can do a competing behavior is I'm now going to make a cup of tea, or I'm now got, and if that cup of tea has more of a ritualistic property to it, so like you're not just boiling a kettle and sticking a bag in it, that is going to be a bit more powerful. Is that, that's what you're talking about there, BJ, yeah?
Yeah, that's certainly one way. So if you can identify, when do I normally break out the beer, open the bottle of wine? You know, what does it come after? And then that thing after, you've called it an anchor, which is actually the technical term in tiny habits. We call it an anchor, but in the broader landscape, it's the prompt. And say, okay, what can I sequence after that instead of opening the bottle of wine? And it could be tea, it could be whatever. So you could try this new sequence in your life. Another approach is to back up even further and say, guess what? I'm just going to break that whole routine from the beginning, and I'm not going to go home as usual. I'm going to go to the library, or I'm going to do something else. So you don't go back into the pattern, and you can try things. Now, one of the big things that I know from habit formation generally and changing habits is that you may not get it right the first time. And in fact, for challenging behaviors like this one, there's a lot of trial and error. And so try something and look at it like an experiment, like an exploration. And if it doesn't work, don't get down on yourself. You know, just like, you know, when you're redecorating a room, you may not get it right the first time and you're just like, okay, fine, that didn't work. Let me try something else. So what's very likely in this case is people will need to try different approaches. Is it putting the tea bag in the water? Is it the tea? Is it going to the library? What is it for that particular specific habit? How do you unearth that one? And see it as trial and error. And when something does not work, don't get upset with yourself. Just see it as an exploration and a journey to figure out what will work.
I like that. I remember always being cautious when someone would say, in the Truth About Alcohol, we have our intensive experience where we work with people for a year to change the way they think about alcohol. And when we talk about artillery, what are the weapons we've got here that we're going to pull out when we really need them to stop us drinking alcohol? And sometimes people will say, well, I'm going to have a cup of tea. And like I said to you earlier, and I think I've said numerous times in the past, I don't do it anymore, but I would say, are you sure that's powerful enough? Are you sure, you know, you love alcohol so much, and now you're just going to have a brew, which in the UK, we have about 15 of them a day anyway. But then this person said to me, no, I love the ritual of it. And I love the fact that I'm doing it. And then that got me thinking, as you just said, we're all going to be so different, BJ, aren't we? We're all going to react to different things. The other thing that came up for me then was resistance. Do you ever read any Stephen Pressfield at all?
No, I probably should. Why don't you summarize it for me? I may know the work, but not the name.
So basically, Stephen Pressfield, his book is The War of Art. Fantastic book, BJ. You'd love it. And it's really quick, easy read. And it's basically the resistance is you go home, you're just you've got your anchor, so you're just going in the house and you put your keys down and you're just going to drink that red wine. But you've said to BJ, you've done his Tiny Habits course, you said, no, today actually, after I get home, I will make a cup of tea, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the moment that Stephen Pressfield says resistance will pop up. But there'll be a little voice in your head that will go in, you're not having a cup of tea, mate. You're having a drink of wine because you're a man and only big girl having tea, right? Now, how have you dealt with, you must have come across that in your work. How have you dealt with that? What strategies have you got for that kind of nonsense going on in our head?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of self-sabotage that happens when people try to change their behavior, and it's for lots of reasons. And I like your description of what's going on there. One of the key things in the Tiny Habits method is to create habits that you really want, not ones that feel like you should have. So if you don't like tea very much, find something else that you really like. And it may be something quite different. It may be that it does require some introspection. And like I said before, some trial and error. It's like, okay, what is a new habit that I really want to have in my life? And maybe for a time, it's an indulgence. Maybe you go to a spa or whatever, like something that is even better than the beer. And for a time, you do that. You don't have to do that forever. And you probably certainly know the trajectory better than I do. But in my own personal experience, the drive, the taste for alcohol wears off, it fades. And I don't know how long it takes for people, but I know that's how it happened for me, to a point where there was only a very little bit of resistance that was easily overcome. But at the beginning, it was, you know, loud and clear. And so I don't know how long that period is, because I haven't studied it and I don't want to mislead people. But one of the things to know for sure is look inside and see what new habits you really want to do. And that will give you a much better chance to overcome the resistance.
I think what jumps out at me there, BJ, is the obvious point that whatever you're choosing as your new motivator, your new habit, you've got to like it more than alcohol. You've got to like it more than the previous one. And there is a danger that, you know, in Strive or someone, you know, you look through all the homework of everybody else and people will put in their yoga, all this kind of stuff. And I love yoga, don't get me wrong, but getting me to yoga is a bit of a difficulty. So that might not necessarily be the best one for me. But jumping on my computer, logging on some an hour doing online poker, well, I could do that very quickly, right? Which actually was one of my one of the ways that I did it was one of my habit changes. I'll play poker because I loved it, BJ. I loved playing poker more than I loved drinking alcohol. So that was really easy for me.
And that's great. So let me make up a method right now, or something tactical. Like I said, I haven't worked specifically on this type of behavior change, but it seems to make sense that you could say, okay, let me just imagine things I love doing. I love surfing. I love hanging out with this friend. I love getting a massage. I love getting a pedicure, whatever. Make that list, even if they're expensive or impossible. And then list at least 10 things, more is better. And then go back and say, okay, is there some way I can make any one of these a practical alternative to coming home and crashing on the couch and drinking, at least for a period of time? And I would suggest you do. And if it's video games, awesome. Now, it doesn't mean you're playing video games and getting a pedicure forever. I mean, I think for some people, so I say I think, not that I know, I haven't studied it, that there is a transitional phase, and that during the transition, you might be doing something expensive or elaborate or whatever, and then you can do something that's maybe a little less practical, or a little more practical and a little less expensive. So consider making that list of behaviors you really, really like, even something like surfing that might be totally impossible to do where you are, but then you may be able to scale it back and say, oh, it's watching surfing videos with friends at whatever. So I think it is a good starting point. Another approach to this, I mean, right now we're still talking about the motivation component. There's ability and there's prompts. But another approach, and I'll blend motivation and tiny habits, and this is one that I've done, is if you go to a business event or a party, and it's, let's just pick a party, you walk in and the host offers you a drink, you can say this: I'm not drinking tonight, or tonight I'm sticking with water. And the tiny habit recipe is, after the host offers me a drink the first time, I say, and you've got to be really clear in your mind exactly what you're saying. And I've evolved a couple. One is, I'm not drinking tonight, or tonight I'm sticking with this, you know, I'm just sparkling water. Once you do that, when you enter a party, the host is not going to be offering you alcohol the rest of the night. And if he or she's a good host, they will make sure you have alternatives. And so notice that in that one moment, by saying a few words, you're changing the trajectory of the evening. And you won't be like, you know, drinking too much and looking terrible in front of your business colleagues or staggering home or whatnot. You go home, sleep well, get up 100%. And so that's a very, now that works from a motivation perspective, because then if you later go to the host and say, oh, I've changed my mind, I'm going to drink, you kind of look like a, like you're not a very consistent person.
Yeah.
And we humans are wired, we want to be consistent and respected. And if somebody says, oh, I'm not doing this, oh, now I am. So you're really locking, you're using a technique to increase motivation to stick to what your commitment was at the beginning of the evening. And it's just a few words.
I love that. I think just to accentuate what you said for people listening there who are running around the block, not really paying as much attention as they should be, create a list of things you love doing. Love doing more than alcohol, drinking alcohol. Remember that this is only for this period of time where we really are cracking the strongest bolts of this psychological prison that we've been in for decades. It, as BJ says, it's going to be different for all of us, but very certainly the need and desire to drink alcohol is going to fade over time. So you won't go bankrupt by your 50th massage. So I think that's really important. And I think also important what BJ says is preparation and scripting. And this is something that we do at Strive a lot. Someone post on Strive and Help and Guidance and say, I've got a real problem. I'm 4 days in. I've got a wedding on Saturday. Everybody's going to drink. What am I going to do? And all of a sudden, we're like, you need a script. What is going to be your killer statement when someone says, why aren't you drinking? What's going to be your backup to the inevitable, or what's the matter with you, some kind of woofter or something? And if you get that script and you go in there really confident with your standing up straight with your shoulders back and you feel motivated, everything else goes a lot easier than that. So
And Lee, let me add a couple of things. One about that script. There are times when this is just my personal experience, when I was in a social setting where I thought, I'm really going to stick out if I don't drink.
Yeah.
And then the explanation was, I've got a big meeting tomorrow, and it would be true, you know, because I always have meetings in the morning, and I need to be 100% tomorrow morning. So I wasn't making a moral judgment about them or what was going on. It was more about, I have this need to be 100% in the morning, and then I would sometimes say that if I really felt like I needed to. Isn't it sad though that we have to explain why we're not drinking this stuff that's really quite bad for us?
We talk about this all the time. It's ridiculous.
I mean, what is up? But and the other, going back a little bit, that list of things you love to do, it would be great if you can find things that are better than drinking alcohol. But it can just be reasonable alternatives. And let me go to the nutrition space, because I've worked a lot more in nutrition. Say you love ice cream. I mean, ice cream is amazing. You know, ice cream's not doing them any favors. And if you find, hey, yogurt, plain yogurt with fruit in it is not better, but it's reasonable. So instead of getting the ice cream, I can pull out the yogurt and put fruit in. And guess what? It scratches the itch and it's reasonable. It's good enough. So I think on that list, you can also add things that you want that might be good enough. They may not strike you as better than ice cream or alcohol, but at least good enough to be an alternative in the moment.
It's one of mine. Raspberries, blueberries, coconut yogurt, flax seeds. Bit of honey, job done. Don't even need any sugar in it.
Good for you.
I think one of the important things as well, reading your work and getting involved in your work, is once you choose these alternatives, is afterwards is to have a little kind of reward yourself or a pat on the back moment. Yeah. So this is one. This is one of the things that didn't always work with choosing online poker, by the way, is that, you know, if you finish your hour and you've lost $200, you don't particularly pat yourself on the back, but you are really deep into celebrating and creating an emotive change within yourself. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. You know, I'll talk about the general principle and then we'll apply it. The fact of the matter is this, and I have a book chapter coming out in my new book, Tiny Habits, that this is the title of the chapter. It's Emotions Create Habits. And there's been a lot of misleading information about what creates habits, like, oh, it's repetition, mostly that, or intensity. Well, it turns out those aren't the direct drivers of habit formation, it's emotions. And so what you can do, if as you're doing a behavior, let's say you're tidying up your office, as you're doing that, if you can feel a positive emotion as you do it, or immediately after, where you look at it and say, oh my gosh, my office looks amazing, good for me, that emotion will help rewire your brain. So you want to do that in the future. And so you remember to do it in the future. And the stronger the emotion, the deeper, I don't know if I want to use the word deeper, but it seems that that has a more dramatic effect on creating the habit. And so if you get good at feeling positive as you do a new behavior, you can be very good at creating habits. So let's apply it. So let's say you walk in, let's take the beer versus tea thing. So you walk in, it's like, yeah, I really want a beer, but let me just get the tea going. So as you get the tea going, if you're like, good for me, I can change, I am taking charge of my life. If you can feel that positive emotion, and in Tiny Habits, we call it celebration, that will help you rewire your brain so that new habit will form. Now, not everybody can do that readily. And I'll be frank, people in the UK have kind of, I'll stereotype here, they push back a little bit, like, oh, we're not like you crazy California people. We don't celebrate ourselves. But when I've worked with people in the UK, and as we've trained coaches in Tiny Habits, they're like, yeah, we have a way of doing this, but it's more subtle. So each person needs to find the way that they can fire off a positive emotion. Sometimes it's a phrase like, good for me. Sometimes it's a physical movement, like a little dance. Sometimes it's just, it could be, in fact, one of mine, one of the most powerful ones for me that I save for when I really need it, like when I really need to wire in a habit quickly, as I'm doing the behavior immediately after, and I say immediate, I mean like, you know, let's say I floss one tooth and boom, right then. But I would, and so a powerful celebration is, I think of my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Bondietti, and I think of her saying, you did a good job. And for whatever reason, thinking that vividly creates a strong positive emotion. And so I use that when I need to wire in a habit quickly. And so if you can find things like that that you can apply, then the next day when you walk in the door, your brain's going to go, oh, how about the tea? Let's put the tea on. Now, the battle may not be totally solved there. You know, it's a process. But this, but using your, it's, you're upregulating a positive emotion. So that's kind of the geeky term. But the ability to have yourself feel positive in that moment will be the thing that will rewire your brain and form the new habit.
I'm glad you went there, because you just stumbled on the very heart of the truth about alcohol philosophy and how we help people become people that don't drink alcohol. You know, going on the work of Joe Dispenza and breaking the habit of being yourself. You know, we believe that we drink alcohol because from the moment we're born, we're designed to drink it. Like you said earlier on, isn't it ridiculous that we have to make an excuse not to drink it? It's because it's so hard, it's so ingrained in our culture. So when we, let's say we walk into a we walk into a bar, we will be remembering very, very biased, emotionally rich moments that were in that bar that relate to alcohol and will want us to drink alcohol. And by by changing our environments and by changing our thoughts mm-hmm. and attaching new feelings to them, we can neuroplasticity, we can rewire those things. And that's what we teach people during a Truth About Alcohol. One thing that you did there that you said to me, which I'm going to really re-emphasize, not re-emphasize, I'm going to emphasize it because I haven't really done it, is I tell people to meditate on what they want their future to be like and think about what the future is and then create the positive emotion that they think relates to that. But I've never said what you just said, which I think is super powerful, which is think of a powerful emotion. Think of an incident that happened in your past that matches that emotion.
Because I'm
sure there'd be people out there who find it very difficult to just create emotion within themselves in the drop of a hat. But if we said to them, okay, quickly, think about the happiest moment in your life. And then the emotion's going to come back and you can relate that to your new behavior. So I thought it was important. The other thing
Go ahead.
No, go for it.
You know, I love that we're talking about this. So in doing all the research to write that chapter, emotions create habits. And that's a huge claim. That's a huge claim. Nobody's said that before in that kind of very straightforward, deliberate way. So I did a ton of research. I called my academic colleagues that are experts in emotions, because I'm not. I'm a behavior change person. So I, you know, call my colleagues and so on. And so talk to three different people who I think are world's experts. And the landscape looks like this. I mean, we're really talking about what's called emotion regulation. And there are all sorts of ways that have developed to regulate our negative emotions. And you learn those things in therapy and so on. And alcohol is one of the ways to regulate your negative emotions. Maybe not be a great way, but it is. There are very few ways that are systematically taught to upregulate our positive emotions. So the skills we have and the tools we have to upregulate our positive emotions are almost non-existent. Mm-hmm. And so that's what this celebration piece is about. And that's what you just described, the exercise. It's learn how to identify and tap into the positive emotions. And I think the future, as we look forward, not even 10 years, but in the coming years, I wish it would happen in weeks and months, but it doesn't happen that fast. I think more attention will be put on how do we upregulate positive emotions? And then how do we apply this usefully? And I'm hoping my book and my chapter on this will help just open the door and the potential for you can upregulate positive emotion to change your behavior and change your life.
Mm. Yeah, it's almost like human nature. And it's whenever I ask, we have a taster where people will try to not drink alcohol for a month. And in one of those daily assignments, it's to outline your strengths and your weaknesses and how you think your strengths will help you get through the month and how you think your weaknesses are going to block your way. People can spend all day writing their weaknesses. They'll just pour them out.
Yeah.
But when it comes to their strengths, it's very few. And I think that kind of links in with this lack of upregulation of positive emotional toolkit, if you like, and something that we very definitely need to work on and intensive. The other thing that come up for me then, BJ, I think particularly related to alcohol, when you're talking about, boom, I just did a really good job then, or boom, I look fantastic now, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Many people who come to Strive and the Truth About Alcohol, I'll actually say everybody who comes to Strive and Truth About Alcohol, they're lacking somewhat in the self-esteem area. So they'll find it very, very difficult to pat themselves on the back. They'll find it very difficult to say, oh, I've just done a really good job, because alcohol has eaten away that confidence. So I think having a group, having a tribe, if you like, of people who can help you to regain that confidence to actually say, you know, I look good today, or I feel good today, I think is super important piece of that as well.
Agreed. I mean, certainly other people can help us feel successful and help us recognize that we're succeeding. And, you know, within the group, or just even if you're working alone, just lower the bar, lower the threshold for yourself. Mm-hmm. Even the smallest change, like flossing one tooth, is a success. It is a change. You don't have to floss all your teeth. I mean, flossing one is like good for me. Putting the tea on and heating it, guess what? You made a change. And so A big part of my work and a big part of my book is to help people understand that you don't have to like run a marathon or lose 50 pounds to feel good about it. The smallest, tiniest of changes, you can feel good about it, and you should, because those tiny changes will add up to the big change. That's how you get there. And all you need to do is string those together, and you won't be perfect. So, you know, don't be hard on yourself. Just learn to do those tiniest of things and feel good about it. In fact, one of the phrases in my book that I keep saying over and over is you change best by feeling good, not by feeling bad. We may put that on the cover. That is such an important concept for people to understand. And it does, you know, maybe it does take people around you to help you get going down that path. If you're feeling very defeated, if you have a lot of baggage around this, but if you don't have that, just trust me, people, you change best by feeling good, not by feeling bad. And even the tiniest of steps, give yourself permission to feel good about that, because that's how you get to the bigger ones. Just like planting a little seed, you don't wait till the tree is enormous to say, I have a tree. You planted the seed, and the smallest little sprout of the seed is like, yay, I'm on my way.
Yeah, your work, I can't wait for your book to come out, by the way. Your work is going to be instrumental in what I call the next change of our evolution here at The Truth About Alcohol, because, you know, I've just started to realize that when people arrive and I say, hey, this is a place where we're going to stop drinking forever, that is the marathon you just talked about. How do we adopt a tiny habits principle so people can, you know, really take micro steps to get there? Well, AA talk about one day at a time. Well, I think we can even break that down even further, because I have people who come to Strive who their main issues are generally 6 till 8 o'clock. If I can get past 6 and 8 o'clock at night, Monday to Friday, I've killed it. I've got no problem. I'm never going to drink after 8. And if you think about it logically, nobody at Strive or The Truth About Alcohol is ever drinking at 6 o'clock in the morning, or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10. So now you can really narrow it down and say, okay, so what's our strategy going to be? We need to find something we're going to do between 6 and 8 every day that we really, really love. And we're going to put ourselves on our back after it. And, you know,
exactly,
the world is working against us because, you know, we used to be go to cinema, but now they've got beer there. Used to be go to yoga, but now they've got beer there. I mean, but, you know, we're working on it. But I'm really looking forward to your book.
Lee, I live in wine country in California.
Yes.
And this little town of 12,000 people, when you go downtown, you can, I mean, there's tasting room after tasting room after bar after bar. It's the town is about drinking. And I didn't see that until I said, I'm done with alcohol.
Yeah, that's
and
so
then
true.
You get this perspective and you're like, oh my gosh, this town is, you can take 3 steps and be to the next drinking establishment. Yeah. But let's go back to, so I've done this method for other, let's put it in quote, bad habits. I don't love that phrase, but I've not done it for drinking, but I think this would work. So if you think of, you know, drinking alcohol is the habit that you want to stop, and then you break it down into what I call specific habits. Oh, I drink at company parties. I drink on the weekends when I'm watching football. I drink a little martini for lunch. So you break down that bigger habit, which I would think of as a big tangle, that's a general habit, into specific habits. And so write down the 8 or 10 or 15 specific habits. Unfortunately, as you say, most people aren't drinking at 6 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, break that down, and you'll see that there are various drinking habits that you have. And then take the easiest one on the list and resolve it. And it might be drinking at business events. And then you just use a little technique. You walk in the door and say, oh, I'm not drinking tonight. I got a big thing going on in the morning. And you just use that. And then boom, victory. You've untangled that piece. And then you go to the next one. That's the easiest, not the hardest, the easiest, and untangle that. And so you can think of any unwanted habit as a big tangled knot. And the way that you get rid of that overall knot isn't by yanking hard on it. And it's not by untangling the most difficult thing. It's you take the easiest one and untangle that. and then do the next easiest and next easiest, and you get better and faster as you go along, and then pretty soon it's resolved. So that's the, so the metaphor that I write about in my book, and I'll share it here, is you don't break bad habits, you untangle them. And that just sets up a whole different expectation about the process. Breaking implies that if you're just motivated enough in one moment, it will resolve. That's not how it works. Untangle means it takes time, it's a process, and you don't work on the thing in deep inside, the knot, the hardest thing. Work on the easy ones first and then make your way, and then you can resolve it with time, because you can untangle even the gnarliest ropes if you approach it systematically. And I think that's a helpful way to think about any habit that's unwanted in people's lives.
That is so helpful. If you're listening to this, Sue is currently doing the intensive. And when we take the intensive experience, BJ, we do something called the vow, because we think vows are very important. If you think of the vow you take when you get married, you know, in Western culture, the one that sticks out to me the most is probably because I'm a man, is I'm taking this vow to never have sex with anybody else again in my life apart from you, my dear wife, right? And that sticks. There's something about that vow which never's a wrong word, but it for me anyway, it's serious. You're not going to break that vow. So we talk
right, about that. Right.
Sue's been struggling with the intensive. We just said to her, hey, Sue, what are you finding most difficult? And she said, well, I'm finding it difficult. I drink alone, and I drink in the week and drink on weekends. So I said, well, why don't you break it down and take a vow not to drink when you're alone, not to drink midweek. Mm-hmm. Now, listening to you now, Sue, you could even go deeper than that, take on BJ's advice and think to yourself, actually, what's the low-hanging fruit here? Maybe a Wednesday. Yeah. Maybe a Wednesday you don't really drink that much. So let's do Wednesdays. Let's take a vow on never going to drink for Wednesday. And then when you've nailed Wednesday, then move on to your next lowest hanging fruit. I think what I've told Sue to do here is the opposite. I've told her to pick her biggest problem. And you're saying, no, take the lowest hanging fruit.
Well, if you need to build momentum, certainly that's a way to go. Now, that said, I'm going to describe a different approach that is completely different than what I've said. And you are the expert. I'm not on this particular habit. But this is what I did was I was like, I just said, I'm done. I'm not drinking in any context. I'm done with this. And so I didn't, do the untangling little by little. And so the point, I just decided I'm done. I'll figure it out. I've got a party tomorrow night. I'll navigate that. When I sit down and watch stupid TV, I'll navigate how I do that when time comes, and I'll just do it. Now, I just, for sure, there are different approaches for different people. So just understand that that's my view, and you're the expert on this particular behavior, but there's going to be different approaches for different people. For some people, untangling might be a good way to go. For some people, finding the one little thing that then makes it for others, it might just be like, I'm done and I'm not going back, and I'm not even doing it temporarily. I'm doing it forever. So there's different approaches, but so I can't tell each person what the right one is for them. But what I can say is it's going to be trial and error. You're not going to be perfect. Don't expect yourself that you'll get it right the first time. Just like you don't get speaking French right in the first lesson, and you don't sit down at the piano at your first lesson and play a concerto. Behavior change is a skill and a process. Mm-hmm. And so just understand and be compassionate with yourself, and do not get down on yourself when things don't go as you wanted them to go. Just go. But when things go well, feel great about it. You change best by feeling good, not by feeling bad. So I know that's true for everybody. What I can't say is what the exact process or journey is for everybody. It's going to be different.
Yeah, I'm like you, BJ. I was one of those that was like, I'm done with this. I'm never gonna drink again, and that was the end of it. But I think you need to be a certain personality, or very rational or logical thinking, or have a real serious catalyst for change. A lot of other people, and really be done with it. There are so many people come to Survive and Truth About Alcohol, and they say, "Oh, Lee, I'm done with it. I'm absolutely done with it. I'm never gonna drink again." Yeah. And then I'll say, "Okay, but before we just get rid of it, why were you drinking? Give me a list of reasons why you're drinking. And suddenly there'd be like 50 reasons why alcohol is the greatest thing in the world. And I'll be like, okay, this is going to be a little bit difficult, because can you imagine life without these things? And all of a sudden it's like, oh no, that will be a challenge. So I think it's very difficult. But what I'm thinking about, just to recap this and I'll move on to ability, is when you were saying about your tiny habit, and I love the way you said, look, you're going to come home, you're going to try to have a cup of tea instead of a beer. It might not work for you, right? But don't lose hope. Now pick something else, right? Yeah. But then it got me thinking to myself, well, what you should do is you should write it down. You should like have a calendar or something. Say, today I did tea. Did it work? Did I really feel great? You know, but actually we check in, we have a check-in category on our Strive community forum. And I'm always encouraging people every day, check in. So if you're listening to this, folks, you can check in and say, I tried a new habit today, it worked or it didn't work, right? And I think that has a certain amount of accountability, and also it makes what is technically like an emotionally charged subject here, like our addiction, mm-hmm. and making it more rational and logical and easy to pick apart, right? The key, and this is what I'm always working on trying to help people, is how to create more pride in what we do and less shame. So without doubt, BJ, the ones who, let's say they decide they're going to drink tea, and then on Monday they drink tea, Tuesday they drink tea, and Wednesday they drink beer because someone's pissed them off or whatever. And then they run away. They don't post on Strive. They feel shame. They feel like they've let people down. They feel like they let themselves down, and they never come back. They disappear. But then you've got other ones who don't post for a day maybe, but then they come back and they say, I just needed to let you know that I screwed up the other day, et cetera, et cetera. They're the people who eventually nail it, right? Yeah. That they develop some sort of grit and determination about it.
Yeah. I mean, here's an analogy or a metaphor that I often share. For any kind of change, think of a baby learning to walk, and the baby, the toddler, is taking these steps. Now, you do not expect that baby to be a perfect walker. That baby's going to stumble and da da da, but it keeps going. And all humans, pretty much, almost all, learn to walk. And they do it, you know, they're not perfect at the beginning, but they get better and better. And for difficult changes, that's what it's like. And so, if you could just understand, for most people in this situation, for whatever, we're doing challenging changes. We're like babies learning to do this. And you don't criticize the baby for stumbling. So you don't criticize yourself for not doing it perfectly. Just understand it's a process. But do get back up. You got to get back up and take the next step and try some more. That's how you get there.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on, we talked a lot about motivation there, and I'm very conscious of your time, so I'm going to move on to ability. Explain about ability, because I can imagine, you know, when people come to Strive and the Truth about Alcohol, and I say to them, well, okay, we're going to try and stop drinking alcohol. It's not the first time they tried. By the time they end up on my doorstep, and they really lose hope, and they don't believe they have the ability. I mean, let's talk about this part of your model.
Yeah, so ability applies to the specific behaviors. So how easy or hard is it to drink after you come home from work, to drink at a business party, to drink during lunch, and so on. So if you look at those specific habits, what you want to do is make the unwanted behaviors hard to do or impossible. And you want to make the good behaviors, or the ones you want, really easy to do. And so that is usually a design issue. So in the home, it's like, guess what? No alcohol in the home. We're just not keeping it here. To make it hard to just walk in and grab a beer, and make it really easy to get the alternative. So when it comes to ability, mostly I'm talking about redesigning your environment, make the bad, quote, bad behavior, the unwanted behaviors hard to do or impossible. And then if you're substituting it, make the alternative really easy to do. And that's really what it comes down to. And the reason for that is if there is no alcohol, no, I haven't done this with alcohol, but I did it with other food, and specifically popcorn. I had a popcorn addiction that was like, and people laugh at that and they think it's not a big deal. It was a big deal. It was a huge deal. And so we banned popcorn from the home. There was no popcorn or popcorn paraphernalia allowed in my home. If I really wanted it, I could go to the store and buy it and bring it home. But that meant I had to like work really hard. And it helped. It was like, guess what? Household policy, no popcorn in the home. And eventually I got rid of the popcorn addiction. And it was a journey. And honestly, it was a journey, but it was by making that really hard to do and the alternatives, which was eating little bits of cauliflower and things like that, really easy to do. It was already in the fridge, ready to go. So that's what you want to think about, is redesigning your environment.
Yeah, that makes total sense. We have a module in, an assignment in an intensive called the Gatekeepers, where we talk about who are the people who controls what comes in and out of your house. So, for example, let's say, BJ, you decide you want to stop eating popcorn, and your wife says, well, I don't care what you want to do, BJ. I'm not stopping eating popcorn. Now we have a problem that we need to deal with somehow, because, you know, the ability to now not eat popcorn is going to be more difficult because your partner wants to eat it. So it is something that we come across. I really think that is super important. And I like the way you emphasize that, because I went off on a different tangent then. I was talking about the ability to do something. You're saying, no, Molly. Let's make the ability not to drink alcohol very, very very, very hot. Let me get this right. Lee. Make the ability to drink alcohol very hard, and make the ability not to drink alcohol very easy.
Yeah. And that works because we humans are basically lazy.
Yeah.
And we do the easiest thing. And so let's go to the ice cream. If I really want ice cream and I have yogurt in the fridge and I have to go to the store to get ice cream, it's like, now I'm just going to do the yogurt, you know, because I don't want to go to the store and all of that. And so you know, that's how to think about it. And for each person, it's going to be different. But notice, in this case, this is not a willpower challenge when you're talking about ability. It's a design challenge. So you, as you redesign your environment, you're not tapping into willpower anymore. Because if it's very impossible or hard to eat popcorn or ice cream or drink or what have you, then it's like, okay, I'll do something different. So you can redesign your environment in order to help you succeed.
Really good book on that, folks, if you're listening, is Mindless Eating. Is that the right one? Mindless Eating, really good one on that. And so prompts, you talk about the three prompts of facilitator, signal, and spark. Can you talk about those a little bit?
Yeah, let me talk about some along the lines of prompts, but newer work. So that's out there, and here's newer work that's coming in my book and so on, and I think it's a little fresher.
Yeah.
So the prompt is whatever says do this behavior now. I used to call it trigger. So if you look at my old behavior model, it was motivation, ability, trigger, and I decided to change the word to prompt. Now, in the Tiny Habits method, we also say that the anchor is this routine that serves as a prompt. So trigger, anchor, prompt are synonyms in this case. Anyway, there are three sources of prompts. One is you self-prompt. Like the idea just pops into your head, like, oh, it's time for popcorn, right? Just like, so it comes from inside. You just self-prompt. Another source of a prompt is something that happens in your context, your environment. Somebody say, hey, do you want popcorn? Or you see a commercial on TV that shows popcorn or whatever. So notice that's a different type of prompt. The third kind of prompt, and we've already talked about this, is an action that you already do. Oh, brushing is the prompt for flossing. Walking in the door and putting down my bag is the prompt for going and opening a bottle of wine. So you have those three sources. Now, some you can redesign. If you have a bunch of alarms and post-its and whatever prompting you to stuff, you can get rid of them. You can turn off notifications. Some of them are not easily redesigned. It's very hard for me to be sitting there chilling on the couch watching something stupid on TV, and up in my brain's going to be like, oh, now would be a great time for popcorn. Mm-hmm. I can't get rid of that. So those kinds of internal prompts that come from within, and I think in this case with the alcohol, that's probably mostly what we're dealing with. If you can't get rid of that, like you can't just take down the post-it note or, you know, ignore the notification, then you've got to remap that prompt to something else. You've got to remap it to the T or to the something like that. So there are these different sources of prompts. And for different kinds of behaviors, usually I'm talking about how to design to-do behaviors. Mm. And in that case, it's like, do you set up a notification or do you use, you know, the tiny habits hack where you say, after, you know, I put my seatbelt on, I will take 3 calming breaths. But in this case, we're trying to unwind or undo the behavior. And that means, how do we get rid of the prompt? Okay, if you can get rid of the prompt, the behavior will stop. But sometimes the prompt is internal and will just pop up at whatever moment, and you can't necessarily get rid of that. So that just really, frankly, takes us back to ability. Mm. The most promising thing to invest in, because if you can't remove the prompt, and if the motivation's there, frankly, it's there, you can invest in redesigning your environment. So the unwanted behavior is hard to do. The alternative behavior is really easy to do. That's your best investment of time.
Yeah, no, I think that is, I think that is crucial. I mean, with the prompt thing, BJ, although we are trying to get rid of the prompt, I think a lot of the work that I do is based on creating prompts to do better habits. So yeah, rather than focus on the alcohol. So people will say to me, for example, how much weight am I going to lose if I stop drinking alcohol? You know, or am I going to feel great when I don't drink alcohol? And I'll be like, well, it depends how much exercise you do. It depends on if you're going to change your eating habits, you know, all things that generally will happen if you're part of a group like Strive of like-minded people who don't drink alcohol, because it's like a domino. Like you've knocked this big domino down that says, you know, I don't want to drink alcohol anymore. It makes it really, really difficult to, like, just, you know, snort cocaine all night or, I don't know, eat buckets of lard or whatever chooses your fancy, watch pornography. I don't know what it is, right? But your mindset starts to change, and you start to, especially when you start going, okay, so the way that we're going to incorporate emotional feeling into this and you know, and ascribe an emotion to a thought is by meditation. Now we're meditating. Mm-hmm. We're changing who we are. Like, we're completely changing who we are, which is what Joe Dispenza says, I think, isn't it? It's like, you know, it's not about finding out who you are. It's becoming a newer version of, a newer and better version of who you are. So I think all your work that you do around this is really good. And it is trial and error. I watched your TED talk, and I thought to myself, right, after I have a pee, I'm going to do 2 press-ups. And then I kept forgetting. So for me, I would need a post-it note on my toilet. So every time I looked at it, it would say, do some press-ups. And then eventually, I wouldn't need the post-it note. But to me, I would need a prompt, an ancillary prompt by my anchor prompt, if you get me. But it was trial and error, right?
Yeah, well, and I so love that you're sharing that. And I'll share another thing from my book that I want my book to be out now. And there's this big long process.
I can feel it.
There's this big long process, and it just drives me crazy. So here's how to think about this. And in the book, I map out something totally new that I call the Behavior Change Master Plan. And it has 3 phases. Phase 1, so, and I apply it especially to unwanted behaviors, you know, bad habits. Phase 1 is focus on creating new habits. And so you just push the, so you focus on creating new habits of any type. It might be tidiness, it might be relationship, it might be, you know, drinking more water, whatever. Because like you impliedly, as you learn to create new habits, you start changing in ways that are subtle but powerful. Mm. So if you've tried to stop drinking and it's not working for you, then go, no, I'm going to start creating a bunch of very tiny, tiny changes. And I would say use the tiny habits method because it works. And there's guidance on how to do that. And just practice creating new habits. And you won't be perfect, but you will be able to create habits faster, and it's more fun than you think. That's phase 1. Phase 2 is then to stop the unwanted behavior. And we talked to just stop it. Don't even try to replace it. Just say, I'm just stopping. And I'm not even going to replace it. I'm just stopping. Mm. Now, that will work for some habits and not for others. But that's the next thing you try. If that doesn't work, then phase 3 is about swapping. about replacing. That's the T and da 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 da. But notice that's phase three in the overall master plan. Now, some people go right to phase three and solve it. But if that didn't work for you, go back to phase one, create a bunch of habits, good habits, get skilled and more confident. So it's both the skills are an ability issue. You increase your ability to change. Confidence is a motivation issue. And you can build confidence in how you can change, even with the smallest of things, like just starting to floss will build your confidence. You can change because it's the same process for any type. It's the same thing. And then I think in this case, and it sounds like just simply stopping drinking is not very successful for many people. I haven't studied it, but certainly there are habits you can just stop doing. Like you can just, like if you get up in the middle of the night to check email, you don't have to replace that with something else. You can just stop getting up in the middle of the night. And then phase three is swapping and finding the suitable alternative. And we've talked about it already. So think of it as the overall master plan looks like that. And there is a lot to be said for just create new habits in your life. And the size of those new habits doesn't seem to matter very much psychologically. They have disproportionately big effects on our life, even the small ones.
Hmm. Yeah, there's an Australian non-alcohol or reduce your alcohol group called Hello Sunday Morning.
Yeah, I know those guys.
And they got something like 500,000 or 1 million in grants from Google, and they created a real super duper website. And one of the things that they incorporate in there is challenges. So
yeah,
what challenges are you going to do? So I'm going to run a marathon, or I'm going to run a mile, or I'm going to run around the block, or I'm going to get off my settee and run to the fridge, whatever it is. But again, that aligns with your philosophy here is learning to become a master. Well, not a master, but getting there, learning how to change habits. And then getting confident about that and injecting pride. And again, it all builds up your self-esteem, doesn't it, as well, and leads into the bigger thing. Yeah, really like
Let me give a really specific example. So let's say you create the new habit. You could use a tiny habits method to create the habit of, at the end of your workday, you tidy your desk. And maybe it's only 30 seconds of tidying your desk. I guarantee when you walk in the mornings and see a tidy workspace, boom, you're going to feel much better than walking in and seeing it a mess. And as you do that, that feeling of success first thing in the morning will impact the rest of your day. You'll be on a more positive trajectory. Any challenge you run into, you'll deal with better and so on. So just the very simple act of tidying, and it doesn't have to be perfect. Just do something, tidy it up a little bit. If you can have a completely blank desk, for me, that's like, I walk in and I just feel like a superstar. It's like, look, I am so in control, even though I may not be in control. I walk in and it looks like I am, and I'm like, yeah, that experience will have ripple effects in other parts of your life, including your how you eat and how you drink.
Well, I had fallen out of habit of interviewing wonderful guests like you. So I was a little bit nervous before we started. So I want to thank you for allaying my nerves. You've been an absolutely brilliant guest. I love speaking to you. I love everything about you, your personality. You've got this really cuddly humor that is emanating from you that puts people at ease. And I want to thank you for all the great work you're doing. Tell us, when do you think the book is going to come out? Where do you want people to go to learn more about you?
Well, technically, it's January 7th, 2020 in the U.S. for my U.S. publisher. I have a publisher in the U.K. I don't know what their date is. It's contracted in like 16 languages right now. I will be sneaking out little bits of the book before publication date. I'm in negotiation with my publishers to do that. But you don't have to wait till January. I mean, headlines are, you know, create new habits that you want. Allow yourself to feel successful. Understand that you change best by feeling good, not by feeling bad. I mean, there's more details and methods in the book, but you don't have to wait till January. And in fact, in my own life, when I decided, yeah, I'm done with alcohol, it's just the bargain is not there for me. It's like a terrible deal. And I didn't know really what would happen. But once I started, especially waking up in the morning and I was 100% every morning, and all the other benefits that happened in terms of my weight and how I felt about things and how I mean, there are all, I should have listed all the surprises. There were so many more benefits to stop drinking than I had even imagined. And I was like, had I known that there were this many benefits, I would have stopped years ago. Yeah. I mean, the Hello Sunday Morning people, they came to my lab at Stanford and whatever, and they had this stop drinking for a year challenge. I was like, that's nice, but I'm not doing that. Why? Why? Because I thought, well, it's kind of a big part. I live in wine country. It's a big part of being in wine country. And for whatever reason, I wasn't willing to do it. And now that I've stopped, and especially for the first month or two when I was discovering the benefits, I was like, why didn't people tell me all these other things would happen that were positive? I didn't understand the ripple effects and how great it would be and how happy I would be to, you know, eventually go to parties, say I'm not drinking, and then knowing the next morning I was going to be awesome and up and running and doing important things, trying to help people.
Well, that's just an added incentive, because I didn't even know you wasn't drinking. I just knew you was fantastic to have on in the behavioral realm, and I just assumed because you was in wine country that you would have been a drinker. I never like to ask, BJ, because you don't want to ask someone. And
yeah, you don't know. Had you asked me 5 years ago, it'd be different. But then I didn't expect my partner to stop. I didn't like impose anything, and I kind of soft pedaled it. I said, it's something I'm just trying for a while, even though truly in my mind it's like, no, I'm done. But I didn't want to threaten. And guess what? He stopped drinking too on his own. He just like, okay. And a month or two later, it's like, okay, I'm done.
And Stella knows all about that. Stella did the same. Stella stopped, and her husband stopped. Yeah. So,
okay. Yeah. And so, just do what you can do. And the work you're doing is so important. And I hope people understand I'm not an expert on this particular behavior. I am on behavior in general. And so your expertise and the specific guidance you're giving people is going to be better than mine on the specifics. So keep going. I hope you reach more and more people. And congrats to you and the community for all the great work you guys are doing.
Thank you, BJ, and right back at you. Stella, I'll catch you later. BJ, I'll catch you later as well. Take care, everybody.
Thanks, y'all. Bye.
Bye-bye.
If the Truth About Alcohol philosophy jives with you and you want to become someone that doesn't drink alcohol, then there are several options available to you, okay? According to the research carried out by Janice and James Prochaska, there are 6 stages of change when it comes to defeating an addiction. And let me assure you, that is your problem. It is an addiction, right? Now, these 6 stages of change are as follows. 1, pre-contemplation. 2, contemplation. 3, preparation. 4, action. 5, maintenance. And 6, termination. And translated into Truth About Alcohol philosophy, these categories become this, right? 1, the death effect. 2, visualization. 3, incubation. 4, ready, steady, go. 5, transformation. And 6, service. And that just makes a nice little acronym, STRIVE. Ha! That's why I did that, right? So these 6 stages of the Truth About Alcohol are not fixed in stone, right? They're fluid, and you'll move between these stages depending on a variety of different factors. But understanding where you are on this spectrum is really critical, okay? Now, 1, the first category you're going to be in, which the Prochaska's called pre-contemplation and I'm calling the death effect, that's when you really are struck by the zombification of societal conditioning. You have no idea that alcohol is a problem, that alcoholism exists. You just think that alcohol is fucking brilliant and that is the end of, right? And that will not be affecting you right now because you're here listening to this. But that is that first level, that first category, the death effect. At the second level, contemplation, as the Prochaska's call it, or for me, visualization, this is where you start to think and question the role that alcohol has in your life, right? And as you're thinking about this and you're pondering and you're kind of visualizing kind of like, you know, how alcohol is having a negative effect in your life and what it could possibly be like if it's not in your life anymore, you may have joined the Alcohol Addiction Podcast and listened to this. You may have headed over to the truthaboutalcohol.co.uk and joined our email list. You might be reading our blog post. You might have picked up a few books and started reading on those. At the third stage is called preparation, right? Or what we call incubation. And this is where you might go a little bit further. And you're now starting not only to kind of listen to podcasts and read some books, but you're actually preparing to change, right? The idea that you could potentially be someone that doesn't drink alcohol is starting to incubate. And you could, at this stage, have joined a community forum like Strive. Or you might have joined NIST Naked Minds forum or Hip Sobriety's Facebook group or something. But you're starting to prepare for change. The fourth category is action, or what we call ready, steady, go. And this is where you really are now starting to take some real solid action. And if you're ready to take action, then you should take the Truth About Alcohol Taster. And the Truth About Alcohol Taster is a 27-day program. You can join the program whenever you like. You just go to thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk and you can find the links there to join up. Or you can email me at thetruthaboutalcohol@gmail.com and I'll sort you out. You join basically a group and you can just work on being someone who doesn't drink alcohol for 27 days to give it a little bit of a feel. We'll introduce you to the Truth About Alcohol philosophy, our three modules of truth, awareness, and freedom. We'll learn to help you see the truth about alcohol, why you drink, why it's so difficult to stop, raise awareness of that truth internally so you can start to change some of those neurological pathways, those thought process and belief systems around alcohol, and then freedom. How do you assert yourself back into a society of people that don't drink alcohol? You do the homework on Strive, you get an assignment every day from myself, and one of the Truth About Alcohol ambassadors will lead you along the way. So that's kind of the action stage. The fifth stage is called maintenance, or what we call transformation. This is where the work really takes off, right? Now, it's really important to understand that moving between the incubation phase and the ready, steady, go phase, you know, so whilst you're kind of like preparing to take action, that could take anywhere up to 6 months. And once you've started to take action, the actual maintenance phase, which is what we call transformation, the stage where you are really working on becoming someone that doesn't drink alcohol permanently, that phase can take up to 5 years, right? It can take that long. It certainly takes six months plus for you to really nail it or give yourself a good shot at this. And for that reason, we've created the intensive. The Truth About Alcohol Intensive, it's a year, an annual subscription where we get really deep into the truth about alcohol, raising awareness of that truth and working out how to be free of it. And we're up to like 70 plus coaching videos. You work with all the Truth About Alcohol ambassadors and myself. It's a great, great process, okay? One of the big mistakes people make is they'll take the taster, so they start to take action, and then once they finish the taster, they don't continue into the maintenance phase, and that can lead them fall back into some of those earlier categories. So it's really important to do the intensive and get through that transformation phase. And then finally, sixth, termination, as the Prochaskas call it, or I like to call it service. This is where it doesn't matter what happens now, you're never going to drink alcohol. It doesn't matter, you're never triggered, nothing ever happens, you're just fucking done with it, right? And that's where I am right now. And this is where we at the Truth About Alcohol can offer you some roles to, you know, give back to the community, give back to the world, and help me create this movement of a million people that don't drink alcohol. And that is to extend yourself into the roles of either a Strive ambassador, where you lead in the Strive movement and really are a rock helping new people come to Strive, or you can become a Truth About Alcohol ambassador, where we pay you to take control of the taster groups and the intensive groups and really work with people who are ready to take the action phase. So if you are ready right now, okay, to start to think about moving up into the next stage, so, you know, you're in contemplation phase now and you're thinking about going to preparation, join Strive, right? It's £5 a month. It'll be the best £5 you've ever spent. If you're ready to take action, if you're ready to do something about this, then join the taster. Okay, that's £99, right? Join the taster. And then if you are just ready to just fucking be someone that doesn't drink alcohol and that is like something you want to do permanently, then join the intensive. That is £1,000. We've got payment plans available. Do not let money be the reason why you do not take this, because we can always sort something out or find you some help, all right? So head over to thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk to join those experiences, or give me an email at truthaboutalcohol@gmail.com. Remember this, folks, okay? You drink alone, but you do not have to stop drinking alone. That's why we're here for you. So reach out and help. Take care of yourself.